Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Books are such handy presents, aren't they? But there are so much choice that can be difficult to narrow them down to the best options out there. Don't worry though, because I'm joined in the studio now by Rick O'Shea of RTE Gold. Andy Del Coffey's on the line, author of Breaking Point, her debut novel that recently won the Irish Crime Fiction Book of the Year, let it be known. And Rick and Adele have done all of the hard work for you. They've compiled their lists of the best factual books of 2022, and they'll both be back with us with their fiction choices before Christmas. Good morning to you both.
Morning,
Rick
Claire.
And Adele. Thank you for being with us. We'll have all your choices up on our website, rte.ie/todaycb. Rick, you're going to start us off. Housing dominating the political agenda. We talk about it here just about every day.
Yeah.
And you've picked Rory Hearn's book.
I have. And there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, it's all too easy to get overwhelmed with all of the coverage as it is at the moment, with articles, with items on radio, opinion pieces, information about the housing crisis. What Rory Hearn has done in this book is he starts at the very beginning. He tries to put the housing crisis in an historical context, talks about the nature of how Irish housing has been put together over the course of centuries, and then leads us by the hand to where we are now, to the nature of social housing in Ireland from the 40s onwards, right the way through to social housing tailing off, then REITs becoming part of the landscape in the 21st century. And then at the end, he goes, here are a bunch of suggestions as to what we might do in order to make all of this change. Now, you might not necessarily agree with his suggestions, but they're interesting ones as well.
And it's called GAFS, isn't it? I didn't say that, so it's important to mention that it's called GAFS.
It's called GAFS, which is a nice play on words.
Okay, and you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. If you're interested and you want to dig back into why all of this has happened, it's essential.
This next one, I'd heard about this, Adele, and it was in the back of my mind to read Butler to the World by Oliver Bullock, about how Britain is subservient to Russian oligarchs, or has been at least in the past.
Not only Russian oligarchs, but tax dodgers, kleptocrats and criminals everywhere. It's an amazing piece of investigative journalism. And I think, so if you're thinking of gifts, this would be good for, I think a lot of male readers will like this, not to gender stereotype. I love it. I'm a woman, but I'm also a journalist. It's basically a former war correspondent, Oliver Bullough. The Irish pronunciation is Bullock, but he pronounces it Bullough.
Okay.
And he was a war correspondent, and he realised after many, many years of working for Reuters in Moscow and Russia and Chechnya that he wasn't actually getting to the heart of the power and the matter. And he realised that actually financial investigations was where it was at. And he has described, very accurately according to this book, Britain as the butler to the world, because they essentially enable, they are a facilitator, chief facilitator according to him, of oligarchs, global financial corruption. Anybody who has money to hide or money to launder is just giving them this perfect loophole and access to anything they want, essentially. And it's a brilliant investigation into that. And it goes back into the history of it, how when Britain stopped, when the colonies essentially gained independence, Britain stopped being the sort of financial centre of the world and just became the financial centre of the UK. But it had all this financial plumbing in place that created this lovely loophole where jurisdiction from different countries didn't apply. And suddenly they had the ability to do all of this, but he's questioning the morality of it, obviously, and suggesting that, you know, what's happened with the Russian oligarchs, where they basically clamped down on them when Russia invaded Ukraine, could likely happen in a couple of years with, say, China and Taiwan if a situation arises there. But he said there's no enforcement; it's always reactive. But essentially, Britain are there to enable.
Okay, so that's
it's fascinating.
Butler to the World, and this is the guy who organised you probably heard about these, the kleptocrat tours of the capital, showing people where all of the various oligarchs lived, did their shopping, had the high life and so on. Adele, another one that you picked was Fergal Keane's book, The Madness, A Memoir of War, Fear and PTSD. He spoke to Ryan Tuberty about this. It sounds like a really very personal account of his working life and the impact that it had on him.
Yeah, and I think, I know it sounds like I'm obsessed with war correspondence now, but actually I think anybody who has been through a difficult time, a trauma, a childhood trauma, an addiction, a breakdown, I think they will love this book, because Fergal Keane, as you said, it is a completely personal story, and he goes through his history of having like 30 years worked in the most difficult, traumatised, brutalised countries on the planet. But also he's talking about the personal story behind his PTSD, his breakdowns, his addictions. And he's kind of asking, you know, did this come from war, or did my early childhood traumas in my family, you know, alcoholism in the family, did they sort of send me to war? Did they send me to those places? And it's a really interesting, compelling psychological examination of humans. And there's one line in it actually that I think will appeal to people, where he says, this book, this is just in the intro, this book is also for others struggling with post-traumatic stress and for those of you who are children of the numberless small wars fought out in dysfunctional homes, whose suffering is so often silent and for whom there will never be any medals or awards to recognise the heroism your survival has demanded. So you're not alone, he says. Okay. So it's for anybody who was interested in that.
That's Fergal Keane. And the next one, I was saying to you, Rick, when you came in, this next one by Richard E. Grant. This is on my list. I'm going to read it, or I'm going to listen to it as you did. I think, though, you're telling me that I mightn't be able for it. It's too hard. It's too emotional. It's too sad.
I'm now conscious of the order in which we're doing these things, and it does make it sound like we're attempting to make everybody weep first thing on a Tuesday morning. I didn't know Joan Washington's name until she passed away. She was the wife of Richard E. Grant. However, if you look at the New York Times obituary that was done of her, it was Joan Washington, prominent dialogue coach to the stars, passes away, also happens to be married to British actor. Mm-hmm. Here it was done the other way around. She was a dialect coach for film and stage for decades. She'd been married to Richard E. Grant for 35 years. In 2020, she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and she passed away 8 months later. So this book is Richard E. Grant's, partially his diary of those times from the moment it began through to her eventual passing. And then it's intercut with their love story beginning in the 1980s, when he's a young lad who has just arrived from Swaziland in London, trying to make his way as an actor well before he becomes famous for stage or for being on screen, and about their relationship. And they seem to have been the most devoted, loving, caring couple you can possibly imagine. It might break you a little bit. It is about two people who have spent their lives in each other's pockets and who loved each other very much. But then it's also a story about how you overcome that, and then potentially how you get on with your life once that's happened.
You didn't find it pretentious at all. I just read a review which said she was clearly a very private person. He's exposed a lot of details about her end of life that maybe she might, we don't know, I mean, but she mightn't be comfortable with. And then there's a lot of name dropping, like King Charles arrived in with mangoes.
There is a wild amount of name dropping in it. Now, that is the only thing. But I mean, given that he is somebody who operates in that sphere, there is that element of, you know,
was their life.
It was their life, and it was what happened. And it was Nigella Lawson on a Sunday would send over lunch for them for months, because they were in this situation, and she'd just like send over something she'd handmade herself. So there is a little bit of that. As to whether or not it reveals things she didn't want revealed, I would presume there was conversations had between the two of them in the time between when she was diagnosed and when she passed away. And her daughter is their daughter is also part of the book and part of this conversation.
I'm definitely going to read that one by Richard E. Grant, and it's called Pocketful of Rainbows. If you're looking out for it, your next one, let's be happy. The next
have
one is laugh out loud.
Oh,
Rick, happy go lucky.
Yes, please let me give you a little bit of happiness. If anybody ever asks me about books to make them laugh out loud like a drain, David Sedaris is always the way I go. If you've ever read things like When You Were Engulfed in Flames, or Let's Talk Diabetes with Elves. They are his essays, many of them written for The New Yorker, some of them done for things like This American Life for the radio show. Mm-hmm. And he's my go-to. And in particular, if I'm ever away and I'm traveling, if he's got something new, I'll bring it with me. Happy Go Lucky is his most recent one. It's a little bit darker. Sorry to bring this into it, but the collection covers his touring work just before COVID. He's one of those people, if you've ever witnessed him, he's been in the National Concert Hall here many times. His touring work prior to COVID, and then that stopping. So his world, which he's normally on the road for 260, 270 days a year, stops, and he's unable to do anything in lockdown. And himself and his husband, Hugh, find themselves being locked in their apartment together, which is something they don't normally have to deal with. It does deal with the death of his father as well, because that happens throughout the course of the time that's covered here. But then him recovering recovering and ending up in a post-COVID world himself, trying to make his way in unusual situations or things that seem unusual because we're now in post-COVID as well. The laughs are dark, but there's still a lot of them.
Okay, dark but funny. You both picked this next one. Negative space. Is this sad again? Are we going sad again? Adele, are we going sad again here?
Oh, look, let's just be very brief, okay? This is, it's a wonderful book by the arts journalist Christine Leach. People probably know her. She does reviews in the Sunday Times or has done for years. But this is, it's a literary memoir, but it's unusual. Okay, so it's describing a point in her life where she gets an anonymous text that tells her her husband's cheating, and it goes from there. But it does not go the usual route. It's not all me, me, me. She's examining the role of art in her life. She is examining what it is to be a woman. She's examining what's in the negative space of her life, which is an art term as well that people probably know. And just the things that we can't see. And it's a really sort of philosophical, compelling read that is, it's elevated from the usual. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, I think if you've ever read Olivia Lang's book in recent years, where she talks about, again, her own life and then uses it as a frame to talk about contemporary art as well. It's something Christine does in this. And you're right, unfortunately, I have realised this is about a marriage breakup as well and about her dealing with it. But then it is also about the nature of the works of art that she finds some form of solace in, and about how her own work changes as a result of what has happened to her in her personal life as well. I found it uplifting by the time I made it to the end.
So you loved
and it's
it.
Very short as well. Yeah. It's a lovely little slim volume, so you'll read it like, you know, in one day.
Oh, yeah. Bless
on couch
short
on
books.
Stephen's
absolutely.
Estate.
Well, look, you both loved it. I mean, you say you devoured it, and Adele says that you loved it. So let's, you know, let's go there with the misery.
Oh, yeah, very enjoyable, very enjoyable.
All right, well, let's break that duck now with the next one, Rick. Gillian Hussey's Lessons from the Bench. This is charting her life, beginning as a young solicitor in Ireland, right through to becoming a district court judge. Why did you pick it?
Oh, it's utterly fascinating. Her story from the very beginning, she becomes a solicitor in the late 1950s at a point when there aren't an awful lot of women who are solicitors in Ireland in the late 1950s. The meat of the story is her becoming a district court judge in 1988, and then for about 14 of the following 18 years until her retirement, she works out of Kilmainham Courthouse. And it's about how she deals with the cases that come in front of her. She has very strong views on the nature of restorative justice. She has very strong views on the nature of how you keep people out of prisons, potentially if they are the sort of people who want to be kept out of prisons. She talks in the book about how if somebody has no interest in changing their life, there is no point in attempting to keep them out of jail. If they're not interested in changing, then fair enough, a sentence is what is for you. But if you have come before the court maybe for the first time and you do want to make a difference in your life, then she has very wonderful things to say about the probation system. She doesn't just talk as well about, there are cases that come in front of her. Phil Linnett comes in front of her very briefly. John Gilligan, in the very, very early days of John Gilligan coming before the courts, comes in front of her. Father Tony Walsh does as well. It's not about that. It's about the probation service. It's about one night she goes out on a night patrol in a Garda car. And then it's about her trying to change the way people view the criminal legal system in Ireland. And that's no mean feat as well, if she can shift your opinion on that in any way.
All right, that's Lessons from the Bench by Gillian Hussey. The other one I wanted to touch on with you, because I'm interested in this myself, is Michelle Obama's new one, The Light We Carry, Adele. And I just wasn't sure about this because I listened to her read Becoming, the Audible version of that. I really enjoyed it. She's got a great writing style, but I'm not sure I can go there again. Is there much new in this one?
Okay, so there is, but there is overlap here because I actually listened to Becoming as well and really enjoyed it. And I've noticed that there is, there's quite a bit, but it's by necessity when she's going into stuff about her and Barack meeting and also a bit about her childhood growing up. But what's different about this, it's kind of part memoir, part self-help or Michelle's advice. And I put it in here because I think, again, as a gift, I think a lot of women particularly will enjoy it because Michelle Obama is, she seems to be anyway, very open and honest. And she talks about her relationship with Barack Obama and she talks about her role as a mother and also her roles as they've changed throughout her life, as many people's and women in particular, as their roles will change. Maybe, you know, they'll get married, they'll lose a job or they'll have children or, you know, and they have to navigate all of this within a relationship. And that's where I find her very interesting because she's quite open about that. But there's more, she uses a lot of other people's stories in in this. So examples mm-hmm. from friends and people she knows who are all obviously okay. anonymous. But
so a bit of overlap, but some new stuff in there as well from Michelle Obama. Rick, you're in year five of your annual Christmas Book Club charity appeal. Tell us about it this year.
It was only when I totted up the numbers that I realised we've raised €160,000 over the last four Great. Years for various charities. This year, as anybody who is involved in fundraising for any charity around the country will know, it is tougher than ever. This is a really tough year to do it. So far, we've raised about €13,500. It is again for the DSPCA and for the Peter McVerry Trust as well. Ideally, if we raised €40,000 this year, then it would be a big 200,000, and I love round numbers
we
like
all
that
do.
And we have the month, we have until the end of December to do it, but it's only ever done with people sending fivers and tenors. It's all built up with those little bricks mm-hmm. And all the money goes towards the DSPCA and the Peter McVerry
Trust. And people can find you on Facebook or Twitter at Rick O'Shea if they want
can
to donate.
idonate.ie/Rick. I tried to make it as easy as possible, so the letter idonate.ie/Rick.
Great, Rick, thank you very much. And Rick and Adele will be back with us before Christmas when they'll be taking us through their top choices of fiction books for Christmas. But for now, thank you both. Brian O'Connell will be here next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.